We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're here.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with producer Cole Bebe.
All Elite, baby. I've even got my shirt. I'm ready to go. I'm dressed up. I'm a corporate shill. Yes. AEW's definitely paying me for all this coverage. No, they're not paying me. But Tony, hey, so you want to pay me some? What? I didn't say anything.
They might need you as a stand-in. We will talk about that in a second.
Okay.
Because AEW needs a Cole after Forbidden Door.
True. That is true.
It's been hyped up. The tickets sold out like so quick, right? Like flew off the shelves. So before anyone knew of a match, people had sold out the Chicago arena. Cool. Love this success for them. Over 16,000 fans. Everyone was hot. Start of the night to the finish of the night. The crowd was into it. Shout out to all AEW fans. For my money, now the best crowd in pro wrestling. Right? Like, I love GCW. I love everything else. This is like GCW and the WWE had a love child and somehow mixed in ECW as a godfather.
There's something to be said for quantity as well. Obviously, like, indie crowds know what they're getting into and they know how to be excited, and you can have that kind of energy in a smaller venue, but when you're able to kind of create at least a semblance of that in an arena that's built for other professional sports, you've leveled up your game essentially at that point.
Hands down.
And I mean, based on the promotions involved here, seeing as this was a co-promoted event, you were gonna get people who knew wrestling, like who were in it to win it. This is not necessarily the most casual friendly card, because again, there's gonna be a lot of wrestlers that if you're just watching wrestling in the United States, you're not gonna know who these people are, and there's still gonna be that crowd that's there. So this crowd was hot for everything. Anything you could have served up, I probably could have gotten out there and gotten a pop. I don't know. Like, people were going crazy for everything, and it was awesome. I mean, just the energy around this was terrific. What a great crowd. Chicago.
Always delivering, right? Like, at this point, they keep going back.
Yeah.
But now I know why. Like, granted, Tony Khan is also, like, from down the block. So, like, that's his backyard.
You know what I find interesting, but before we carry on with the buy-in and the rest of the card, was I was actually shocked that I know CM Punk is hurt, but you know you're gonna get a cheap pop right there. His music plays, it's Chicago. They're gonna go ballistic if they hear that music. And they didn't need it. They have CM Punk on the roster. Yes, he's hurt, but they didn't feel the need to go like, hey, we need to sell some merch. Like, let's get CM Punk out there. Like, they respected CM Punk. Is injured and he's not competing. And even though they were in Chicago, I mean, obviously they know that, like, Chicago is one of their bases and they're going to be back.
Are you saying they're not going to parade him out like they did Cody Rhodes with the torn pec and just,
you know,
hey, CM Punk, get out there.
You got, well, you have it like WWE where it's like they have a countdown clock for Cody Rhodes every time. So it's like, tune in. Cody Rhodes is going to be here. Cody Rhodes, Cody Rhodes, Cody Rhodes. And it's like CM Punk is, you know, they gave him the title. He was supposed to be the guy carrying the mantle. And I understand he's injured, but even just like for a showdown, I don't know, just a, or even just like a, hey, Chicago, I'll be back soon. Like, yeah, they didn't do any of that. They just stuck to the wrestling.
A face-off against the interim champ?
I thought that was going to happen, for sure.
I mean, I think
what
I
we ended up getting
smart business.
What we ended up getting was, we'll talk about. We'll talk about.
Yeah, I mean,
we got a lot to break down. A lot of really good stuff, there. Though. A lot it of is. Really, really, really good stuff.
Let's start with the buy-in. So, again, this is still like a dream-style event, right? Like dream matchups. Like New Japan came to America, and it's a little different than the ROH card. It felt a lot different because they did Super Card of Honor. In MSG? Mm-hmm. I went there, I think. Yeah, like Mania Weekend once. But it was them, ROH. Cool. That was fine. It still felt a little weird. It didn't flow as I thought it would. New Japan trumped popularity, you know, ROH and popularity. It felt like a pro company with an indie company.
Yeah.
It's just what it felt like. This was two pro companies.
Yep.
This was the Pro Bowl of pro wrestling. This was AFC versus NFC. This was, okay, we finally get to see, or it's more at baseball, right? Like before there was interleague, it was like, oh, we finally get to see these people play all the time. Like occasionally we'll see AEW people go to Japan. Occasionally we'll see Japanese people come here, but now it's like full card. This is the all-star game for pro wrestling. So it's cool. We get the buy-in. We start off Goto Yoshihashi versus QT Marshall and Aaron Solo. Oh, all right.
Yes.
I don't, again, I'm not an AEW hater. People know that. They listen to the show. I'm not a WWE fanboy. Has nothing to do with WWE. I'm keeping it strictly on my critiques for AEW. This roster is so damn loaded. Yep. We'll get to the injuries. And I understand. Ravaged by injuries currently. I understand that you have to really book this kind of based off what happened on Dominion, what you have going on. Allegedly, like CMLL or whatever said, like, a bunch of the Spanish talent couldn't compete. So no Andrade. You don't have Roosh, who was just signed. You don't have the Lucha Bros. Yeah. Anyone who's a champion down there probably couldn't compete. Whatever. If they're signed and do a deal there, it wasn't on table. Get that. The roster beyond that, stacked beyond imagination. A ton of tag teams. A ton of trios. Why is QT Marshall mm-hmm. on a pay-per-view?
Yep.
I don't care if you put, how about we put the other two guys from the Black Order or whatever the hell they're with Malakai Black. Why don't we put
Brody King, Buddy Matthews? Yeah.
Yep. Buddy and Brody in this match.
Sure.
Why not? That's a good tag team. Why don't we put what? I understand there was like an injury angle, but Jungle Boy, Luchasaurus, good tag team, even though they just lost. Hell, I would have taken the best friends
sure.
who've had a hell of a 2 years with the company.
Dark Order.
Dark Order. Is Private Party still around?
Private Party.
Like,
they had, and I understand they were in a segment later, but you're sitting on Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. Two absolute freaking studs.
But come on. And you can't put them. It's the buy-in.
Ah, man.
Why is QT Marshall on my team?
QT Marshall here to do two things, okay? Eat pins, get money. That's QT Marshall. Like, every time I see QT Marshall, that's like, he just, crowd's not hot. Like, they boo him. He's like, cool. And then he does his thing. He's not remarkable in any real way. I mean, like, obviously he's been with AEW for a long time, and since then the roster has outgrown the need for people like QT Marshall.
QT Marshall, fucking, what is that? Dustin Rhodes. Like, there's people I don't have to see again.
And Dustin doesn't really Dustin only shows up when he gets like called out specifically, and it's like, yeah, I'm gonna have
occasionally
I'm gonna have a dream match, and Dustin has his kind of one moment in the sun and he kills it. You know, QT is just it's card filling, you know. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, this was part of the free portion of the show, so people did not pay their money necessarily to watch QT Marshall. So that is the one thing going for all this. So I think I understand what you're saying as far as like why them. I think I said the same exact thing when I saw that they were on any portion of it. But you know, thankfully the match was quick.
Super quick. So again, New Japan wins it. I was like, okay. Maybe my brain is warped due to the WWE. With the stupid like brand split shit where you go to like Survivor Series and they have a tally. Yes, I was keeping score.
You were keeping
Cole.
Score. Of course you were.
I was trying
cool,
not
New Japan
to. Is up.
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying not to because they didn't bill it like that either. They never really build it. Like they build it as it was billed more like an all-star game.
It's us versus us in All-Star Games. We keep score. No participation trophies, Cole.
That's yeah, but like the Pro Bowl was a flag football game.
I will tell you this.
I'm sorry, it was a touch football game. Excuse me.
It is, yeah. But one team gets 50K and one team gets 25.
But there wasn't that stakes on the line for this. The stakes were some titles. Yeah.
The stakes is respect. Ever New Japan? It's like I understand. Gato came out. We'll talk about that in a second. He was there, right? But it's one of those where it's like, come on, you got to do a little better. They're up 1-0 currently as we speak.
Sure. I think, you know, and we'll, I think towards the end of this, once we, it'll be fun to sum up kind of our thoughts just on this pay-per-view as a whole, because I think the vision for what Forbidden, this is Forbidden Door 1. I think we can all agree on that. There's going to be more. Because I don't think this is a one-time event. How does this become evolved, and how do you create a vision for what Forbidden Door is? Because a lot of this was, hey, we have a Forbidden Door deal, and we're going to be in Chicago. We'll see you then, right? Because it was in an awkward time for AEW. Double or Nothing has just happened. They usually have a lot more time between pay-per-views. So I think a lot of that goes into, you know, maybe there is a competitive element added into, you know. But we'll see what that looks like. But this is first buy-in match. We got through it.
Should have been immediately. Next, we have Lance Archer versus Nick Comoroto. I don't know.
Lance Archer's on here because he's going to be in. He'll be in G1, I believe.
Okay.
So that is why Lance Archer is here on this card. I don't even think Lance Archer.
I'm okay with that.
I don't know
why that match is needed. And again, I'm not hating on Lance Archer, mm-hmm. right? But why do we need this match?
And
that is my question.
Right, yeah. And it wasn't, like, billed anywhere. Like, I didn't see, like, a Lance Archer graphic anywhere on this card. And maybe I just missed it. I it's very possible. But very much so, this is a case of, hey, Lance Archer's going over to Japan as an AEW representative. He's going to be participating in the G1 tournament. He's in the A block with people like Jeff Cobb, Okada. He's in there with some big boys. So Lance Archer being in there, and Lance Archer has been a talent that's needed. He's kind of needed a role. Because, I mean, you look at him, yeah, and he looks like a fucking dude, right? Like,
I've never been a Lance Archer fan,
no,
but I get his role.
Me neither.
I 100%
but
get his role.
He's a big guy. He's a bruiser type, kind of, right? Yep. And he's unfortunately ending up in feuds where he really isn't Murder Hawk Monster. He's just Lance Archer. Like, he needs to kind of get that rep back. Going to New Japan, I feel like can only help that, especially if he's representing AEW in the G1, one of the most prestigious events. So, very much a case of let's just have Lance Archer have a good showing and be able to kind of go like, hey, make sure you watch G1. Very much a marketing move for New Japan.
Last match from the buy-in.
Uh-huh.
Keith Lee and Swerve cut promos about working together and why they're working together again versus El Desperado and Yoshinobu Kanemaru.
Yes.
Nothing against the team. Like, El Desperado had one hell of a show in this match. There's levels to this shit. And AEW, we'll get to it being on a buy-in first, formal. But New Japan, if you ain't sending your best, or even a, give me some names as a tag team, nah, we don't. I'm not putting out these two guys because they feel bigger than a match against El Desperado and Kanemaru. Like, why?
Right.
And then Swerve and Keith Lee went on to show out
and
didn't crush it.
Yeah, absolutely. Really good match.
But half the people saw it because it wasn't on a pay-per-view. It comes down to just saying, like, when, and this is 100% true, again, it came down to, and I've been saying this whole time, yo, Tony Khan, all right, cool. Maybe there's not a top, you know, black talent there that should be, you know, in the title hunt and all this stuff. And you know what? He doesn't have the horses, or, you know, there's a lot of things, a lot of stuff in motion. He has to rely on some of the ex-WWE talent to put the company over. I get it. Even with CM Punk, I get it. You had an interim belt created that you can give to anybody. You can have anyone competing for that interim belt. You can dictate who the main event players are. You can have someone go and lose for the belt. You can establish main event level talent. When people come in, you establish immediately who's the main event guys, who aren't, like, from the spot, you know who your guys are. Tony Khan is about to run out of excuses. Because, and it took Miro a little while, he was in that dumbass angle where he's the best man. Then it clicked. But it clicked for the mid-card, then he went away. Now he's back. We'll see. And I understand slow playing, but you're not slow paying Adam Cole on the middle or a buy-in. Right? Like, Adam Cole's not on nobody's buy-in when you bring him in. Keith Lee is the level, even if you don't think Swerve is yet, because Swerve wasn't NXT champion. He didn't make his Rumble debut against Brock Lesnar, who said, damn, that's a big boy. You know, he wasn't the last man standing in Survivor Series against from Roman Reigns.
Keith Lee has the crowd singing every time he's in the ring. That's presence.
Come on. Like, Keith Lee has done some shit before he was Bearcat. He is the first dual champion in NXT. This is a guy. The guy, if you want him to be. He's done more in NXT, and I love Cole and the indies and all this. Even indie Cole. Keith Lee has done more in a shorter period of time than even Adam Cole. And let's not even mention the other people we brought in. There's no reason to have this man tag team on the buy-in ever. That's just real.
Yep.
And I think the world is Swerve. And I think his time is also coming. If you want to slow build Swerve, though, I get it. You don't slow build Keith Lee. Man's one, he's like 37. Two, his accomplishments, no. Not at all. That guy could come in right now, and at least he's third match from the main event. At least. It's unacceptable. And a great match. Unacceptable. Tony Khan's this close to running out of time.
I agree that, I mean, again, it was, yes, they showed out. It really feels like this was a spot for, hey, don't forget that these guys are doing stuff. Because ultimately, this match ended up becoming about advancing the feud between Hobbs and Starks and Keith Lee and Swerve, which ultimately, like, that's a tag team competition right now. Those are singles matches. Like, those are singles cards, you know? Like, those are singles programs. Ricky Starks and Swerve can tear a house down. Keith Lee and Powerhouse Hobbs can tear a house down. I agree with you. I mean, Keith Lee should be getting a lot more a lot more singles attention right now than, you know, than he is, than he has been getting so far. I think, you know, there's definitely an angle for Keith Lee where I see, here's an idea. There's a certain other big dude who just had his adversary go run and take his ball and go home. He's got nobody right now.
Nobody.
Keith Lee needs to be working Wardlow.
But they're scared for people to lose. And when wins count, and I love pro wrestling, but we are booking stuff. If you put too much at stake with win-loss records.
I agree with that.
People and the people booking it are scared to death to have people lose. Why? Reset it every year. It's a season.
Right.
Well, every September. And no, yeah, they reset it. Like every year or every December, they reset it. But I just saw John Moxley's record 54 or 52, 4-1. And they're still parading his overall record. For what? No. Cut that shit out. Every season is a new season. So, yes, you can have Wardlow take his bumps now. Because he's still coming up, blah, 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 him and Keith. Wardlow could take a loss. They shake hands. Two big men bumping meat.
Yep.
And you know what? You shake hands. Keith Lee goes to walk away. Wardlow pulls him back. See you again.
Right. Well, and it's ultimately.
That's badass. I'll see you at the top.
Right. And it's ultimately title stuff you can start building now, right? Because ultimately I see the future of Wardlow having the TNT championship.
Yep.
That's like, that's money right there. Keith Lee, Wardlow, TNT title program. It's better than whatever the fuck they've been doing that title last 4 or 5 months, because that shit's been bad and
it's not good,
you know. And that's not, and like Scorpio Sky, Sammy Guevara is fun to watch, but like, ugh, those stories and those programs were bad. It was
the hot
good.
Potato was horrible.
Oh, the hot potato, and part of that was Cody Rhodes on his way out and him hot potatoing with Sammy Guevara, like,
and it never stopped.
Stopped. So like, that belt needs some stability. Getting that belt to Wardlow eventually is I think a good route to that, and then giving Wardlow some people to, like, legitimate threats. Keith Lee, Powerhouse Hobbs. There are guys out there for Wardlow to fight that gives Wardlow not squash matches, right? And that's, I think, what Wardlow needs next is to really build some programs with different wrestlers. So, yeah, I agree. This was very much a match that seemed to be made out of the case of, we need to get these guys visibility on the card so we can keep advancing their story, and just like check them in, because ultimately we're coming towards a collision course of Hobbs, Starks, and Swerve. We need to get there soon, and wherever that match is, better have some sweet stakes on it, because that's a banger of a match waiting to happen.
It'll be on a buy-in.
If it can't be
at this rate,
no, it can't be. No. I mean. I understand the fear of that.
No, it'll be on. But it, again,
it can't be.
I have no faith that it'll have legit stakes. I have no faith that they just won't use it for another excuse for Swerve to take a pin. I have no, like, it's just one of the things where it's just like, the tag team is cute. It got to elevate both of them. But in the end of the day, Keith Lee never needs to be in a tag team.
That I agree with.
He accomplished enough. And what you've done. And it's cool. Like, Adam Cole's been doing trios, right? Like, I understand it. A lot of his matches have been trios matches, like, to keep him cool. But he's had his solo stuff. And even his trios matches are never on a buy-in. They're never low on a card. They're never opening. And I know people say, well, Keith Lee and Swerve were just in a tag team match. And that was, what, second to last. It was like, cool. And that team took the pin to Jungle Boy and the Dinosaur. Like, Keith Lee is, I can say, and that's no disrespect to anyone else, no disrespect to anyone in these matches, he's better in this. And that's okay, because his resume dictates it. He's better in this. So that's my criticism of that. Match, perfectly fine. They're incredible wrestlers. They could wrestle me and you on the buy-in and go crazy.
And go,
we'd
and
be
have
sore as hell.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I'm not taking the spare bomb by Keith Lee. You know, Swerve isn't surfing on me, like, on that spot, which was insane. But it's one of those things where, all right,
Got to get some more love for those guys as singles competitors. I agree.
I will let it play out as much as everyone like laughs
agreed.
At me. And
agreed.
One in Reverse Rat Pack laughs at me. Like, let it play out with WWE. I do the same shit with AEW. I will let it play out. But I will tell you, there is no excuses. And already, it's a little prickly. But I'll let it play out.
There's a storm rising. Let's put it that way.
Yes. Then we have next match. Let me find this. Oh, main card.
No, not quite. You're missing one more.
No. Yes. We had a promo. That was it for matches.
No, we had the Acclaimed.
Yes. Oh yeah, I guess it was.
They had a match. No, they did have. Yes. They have a match.
It was a match
against.
It was Billy Gunn.
LA Dojo. Yep.
Yes, Max Caster, Ass Boys, LA Dojo.
Really, the only thing we got to mention about this was Danhausen now has a track on Spotify for Billy Ass and the Ass Boys.
Yes.
And then the Ass Boys ran back, and obviously Max Caster does his rap to the ring.
Yep.
We get a little Scissor Me Daddy Ass, which is always great.
That's the best part of this entrance.
Just the pop. It's just
Scissor Me Daddy Ass.
Automatic pop.
I can't wait to go to my next AEW event, and like, you know how people used to just too sweet random people? Nope.
It was happening at Double or Nothing.
I am telling people, if you see me, you do not too sweet me. I'm only accepting people who are scissoring.
That's it. You just look around the arena. It's just everywhere. Everyone's scissoring. One of the greatest lines ever invented in wrestling, in professional wrestling, has to be "Scissor me, daddy ass."
Daddy ass.
That's fucking money. I want to have that on a shirt and be presented with no context.
And the Acclaimed, I told someone this other day, I was like, oh, I don't remember one spot in any Acclaimed match yet. And they might be my favorite tag team in AEW.
Like that whole presentation is really good.
It's sports entertaining.
It is sports entertaining. Very much.
And as much as people should, yeah, that's cool. But in 10 years, the stuff that you remember.
But the pop.
Oh.
Every time their music starts, the crowd goes nuts. We heard it here in person.
If they push them the right way, and if they get to the top of the tag team card, their pops are going to be crazy. People are like, yo, they're getting Road Warrior pop. Like, it's my first NXT, I saw Enzo and Cass come out. And the Enzo Amore, like, maybe it wasn't NXT. It was their call-up, maybe, on Raw. And I was there for it. And when everyone knew, and you can't teach that. Like, that shit was crazy.
Soft.
And Cass, yeah, so, like, that shit was nuts.
This is an unfortunate situation, what happened. Just don't do that.
Damn shame.
Yeah. Do not drop the ball.
Damn shame what happened to those boys.
Don't fuck this up. No. You got a good thing. This is
that level. To be fair, Vince McMahon fucked it up before Enzo could fuck it up because he broke them up as a tag team. Never saw Big Cass again. Yeah. So.
Now.
The entrance is money. First match. Chris Jericho, Sammy Guevara versus Minoru Suzuki versus Eddie Kingston, Wheeler Yuta, and Shoto Umino. Let me get this right before I make the mistake of this. Hold on, I got to open up another window. But the match itself, enjoyed it thoroughly.
Yes.
I have not a bad thing to say about that match at all. Sammy Guevara gets on my nerves a little bit. Like, I don't need him with Jericho.
I think Sammy Guevara gets on a lot of people's nerves, right?
Which is a good quality in a heel. But don't need him with Jericho.
But is he getting the right heat?
Is he getting go-home heat, you're saying?
I don't think Sammy Guevara is getting good heat right now. I think people are, like, because Sammy Guevara is extremely talented. His high spots are crazy. his match with Cody Rhodes, that ladder match, is one of the matches of the year. Yep. He's such a good performer. But boy, oh boy, the TNT shit, the stuff with Ty Conti, people are sick and tired of it. Like, it really, that was the reaction that I was feeling too at Double or Nothing of like,
yeah, they didn't want it's obnoxious.
They didn't want to see, it's obnoxious. Yeah. And it's not good. He like, so I think it's weird because he's with Jericho, and I do have some problems with what Jericho is doing, but ultimately Jericho's heat is very different. Jericho's heat is legitimate wrestling. He's a heel.
Yeah.
Don't like Chris Jericho because he's a heel, but he is performing the role great. So well. He's the Wizard, for God's sakes. He keeps coming up with these different like monikers, like over the past 5 or 6 years. What it's been Painmaker. It's been the Wizard. You know.
Le Champion.
Yeah, Le Champion, Le Sex Gods. Like,
yes.
Now it's Trey Sex Gods, which I actually think is a very good name. That's but funny. Like Sammy Guevara, to me, every time he comes in the ring, people just go like, they don't want to see Sammy, which is unfortunate because Sammy's such a good competitor.
People love Tay Conti for a second, and people are like, "Tay
Conti was great as a singles player."
Yeah, and then now like whole dynamic,
and I think the fact that it's gone over to social media and it's very, very just like in your face. Annoying.
I mean, the fact that he proposed in the ring last year, and then like now they're getting married is kind of odd. Just it's on like a real life personal level.
Yeah, and Sammy's had some controversies that
in the midst of that
forced him to be suspended for time. So
yes,
it is unfortunate. Now that said, about this match, they knew what the people wanted.
Mm-hmm.
You know what the people wanted? They wanted Eddie Kingston to get in the ring. And they wanted him to be in the ring with Minoru Suzuki. And they wanted him to beat the shit
out of
each other.
Chop the hell out of each other.
Oh,
that
was great. It was great. So the Suzuki Kingston spots were awesome. Wheeler Yuta was great in this match as well. We didn't get to see a whole bunch of Shota Umino, but I think Umino was great.
Shota Umino in the spots that he had. I will tell you this. He is the next big wrestler in New Japan.
That dude is a freak athlete, man.
He looks like you cloned the Ace.
Yes.
Like, he looks like the Ace 20 years ago.
He does. It's literally like you're looking in the mirror of Tanahashi.
Tanahashi. Like, mirror image. Like, and now with the white pants, the long pants and everything, I was like.
And he had the jacket that said jacket, shooter. Yeah. That was sick.
I was like.
He's got the look and the ability, and
you're
95% of the way there.
He's going to figure. I looked at that, I was like, oh no, he's the next top guy. And in his limited spots, what he was able to do, I was like, oh no, he's the real deal. Like, okay, he's their next big thing. So I understand why he was in this match, because I was like, he feels like he belongs.
There's a spot later in the pay per view that we're gonna have to talk about. I've definitely got some issues with, but if it leads to something else down the road, I'll get it.
All right.
As we have to say, we'll wait and see what happens, as you've coined. But it was a great match, super entertaining. I think because there were so many group matches, this was not a singles heavy card at all.
No,
it was like everybody. It was either fatal four ways, a lot of three man tag, a lot of bodies. In these matches. So you're gonna, when you have that many when you have that many participants in these matches, everyone's got to come in and hit their spots. So it was just like spot. And for that sake, this match was incredibly entertaining. And it hit all the right notes. Eddie Kingston is still just the fucking
super over.
Man.
We'll talk about that later.
Gets tagged in and crowd just fucking erupts. They just want Eddie Kingston.
Yep, we'll talk about him a little bit more, as the pod goes on. Let's do one more match and then hit a break real quick. So we have FTR tag title match.
Yes.
So we have them against United Empire and Roppongi Vice.
It's Great O'Conn, Jeff Cobb, Trent Barretta, Rocky Romero.
First off, Great O'Conn. The man can't wrestle a lick, but I don't need him to.
He ain't there for wrestling.
No, he ain't there for wrestling. I saw an Instagram post with this man in the bathtub. This man's gimmick. Between that, what he was doing here in Vegas, and the all his social media.
All you can say is the man's a legend.
That's all you need to say.
And that's about it. Is he a wrestler? No. Legend? Yes.
He's with Jeff Cobb, who's like...
Who's a that big meaty man slapping meat. That dude's a
wrestler's
beast.
Wrestler.
That dude is a monster. Jeff Cobb was great in this match.
What an odd pairing. But it works. So...
Indeed.
Yeah, Roppongi Vice, I've been on record. They are not my favorite tag team. Never have been. Never will be. It's mostly because I hate their entrance music. It gets stuck in my head every damn time. Roppongi Vice. Like, that shit is so stupid. Oh, it is horrible. But by all accounts, Rocky Romero's an incredible person.
Rocky Romero's great. And Trippretta has been in some good matches.
Yeah, and Romero's Puerto Rican. I got to root for everyone Puerto Rican. But God, I hate that music.
But you know, does have some sweet entrance music and some sweet entrances and some sweet bomber jackets. FTR.
Their new music is way better.
I mean, it is really too bad that Dax had to leave for a little bit, but
yeah.
God damn, is that one tough son of a bitch.
I was about to say, he still looks very banged up. But he's back. And another really good match. They've hit their stride. Hence, spoiler alert, you guys didn't know, they became IWGP tag title champions along with ROH champions. They have one more belt. I forgot what other belt they have.
I can't remember the other belt.
I don't know. They're strapped
in gold.
Yes. They have three right now. And it's just one of those things where it's like, this is the FTR we expected to get coming from NXT. But they had to kind of find their footing, you know, different factions, no faction, blah, blah. Now they're putting on their matches in ring that they should have been putting on before. They are great. You know, I was talking on Twitter, and let me go to my Twitter while we have this. Shout out to Greg Coleman, who listens to Pod all the time. Greg was just like, you can't say they're not the best tag team in the world right now. And he was like, they have all the gold. You can't say they're best tag team. I was like, I mean, you can. Like, I guess, like, if my biggest thing was you can't put booking into the equation for best tag team, right? Like, just because they have three belts in three different promotions, like, I could book my mom to win three belts in three different promotions, right? Like,
that's fair, but I don't think that necessarily is the only quantifying factor.
Correct. But that's kind of just how it was, like, phrased in the tweet. So sure. I was like, oh, that's not the end all be all. But he was like, yeah, no, it's not. But, like, they're in ring as well. I was like, yeah, that's fair. I think what they're doing and their work rate and the matches and the storytelling and everything is much what I liked in NXT. And it's one of those things where, yeah, if you want to put them on your list of best tag teams right now, the best tag team in the world, I can't knock it. Somebody has to be. Like, you know, I think the Bucks, when they turn it on, are still in that category. I think, man, it's one of those, it's the Bucks. The Usos, to me, again, even with their pool being shorter, but those matches they had for the belts to become unified champions, them and the Street Profits, like, the Usos still got it. So, Bucks, Usos, Lucha Bros, FTR. It's a short list for me, right? So, it's like, between those four tag teams, yeah, one of them is the best in the world. So, if you want to say it's FTR, then that's cool. But, I mean, I remember FTR versus Bucks. It was cool. FTR versus Lucha Bros. It was cool. Lucha Bros Bucks, it's fucking insane. Like, the cage match was insane. So it's like, do I put FTR over them? Because they've had a run of belts. And they have great matches. But when the Bucks want to have great matches, against the Hardys excluded, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, no, they can show you they're still the best in the world. And have been for a very long time. But to have three of those four tag teams I just mentioned in one promotion, it's an embarrassment of riches. So congrats, AEW.
They are the workers. Like, you see FTR on a card, you know exactly what kind of match you're going to get. Yep. They have the 7-star section. You know you're going to get, because, like, they are the fusion of where tag team wrestling is now and that old school flavor.
Yep.
And that resonates with people. And I think that's been mostly the conversation surrounding them recently, is like, WWE missed this opportunity with FTR.
I don't think so. I think for what it was and for what NXT was, WWE hit what they should have hit.
NXT,
they made FTR, like, the Revival wasn't a thing.
Right.
Like, they were the mechanics, right? Like, they came in and you're like, oh, they're cool. They're kind of like low pudgy and they wrestle like old school, but is that like even cool now? Like, it was a bunch of flippy shit and high spots and Young Bucks and even the bigger teams, like, I don't know, fucking War Raiders and all these people, like, they all had flippy shit and high spots. And then, War Machine, excuse me, ROH. So, like, you have all this stuff, and it's just like, yeah, like, no one's wrestling like that anymore. And it still wasn't cool. NXT didn't know what the hell it was for a second. And then they got a gimmick. They became top guys. They put the jackets on them. They didn't show up to NXT with those cool-ass jackets. You know, they watch film, and the PC is the greatest fucking tool in the world of pro wrestling. People say what they want, but WWE PC and the library and your access and learning to craft a character is the best tool in professional wrestling. And they went, they hit the drawing board, came out with that, and lo and behold, now the in-ring matches the gimmick, matches everything else. So no, WWE didn't miss the boat. Like, they had them. NXT had them. They were arguably the best tag team in the world for a tiny period of time, I still say. It was the Young Bucks at that time in ROH. And New Japan, but FTR was rolling out them versus DIY Insane. Them versus, they had a great match against TM61, which is the Mighty Don't Kneel. Insane match between them and the Mighty Don't Kneel. Like, there's so many good matches that they've had in NXT. When they went up to WWE, had a couple good matches. People forget they're 3-time WWE tag champions. They didn't just have a horrible, shitty run. You know, they weren't Bearcat. They weren't, you know, Cross the entire time in leather spandex. Yeah, Dax had to shave some back once. But, like, in the grand scheme of things, they had some good runs and some damn good matches. So, no. Nah. They maxed out on what they were for WWE. WWE got enough out of them to where when they walk, you're like, cool, you got what you need.
And I think where it ends up going to, though, as far as and it being like a conversation of like or a topic of like, oh, they missed the boat or on the, I agree with you, they didn't miss the boat. The thing was, is in order for them to evolve, we needed to what them being in AEW has allowed for people to see is they we've learned a lot more about who Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler are.
Yeah.
Learn a lot more about them as people. And I think that peeling back the layer with the combination of where they were in WWE to where they are now, where they clearly have settled in on their comfort zone inside the ring and their whole gimmick of coming and what they're trying to accomplish. It just feels like this year, year of our Lord 2022, the seven stars have aligned for FTR to be having the best year out of any tag team so far.
Hands down.
And it's great to see for these guys. These guys are fucking awesome, and it's just, you know what you're getting every time they step into a ring. And again, like, just to think that this the tag team division in AEW it's just stupid. It's just stupid.
Insane.
Stupid.
And like, and free them, LAX.
Yeah, truly. And but I think what's great about this is, and the potential of them now with obviously the Ring of Honor championships and now with the IWGP tag titles, this means they're going to Japan.
Yeah.
They're going to be fighting some more great matches over there. They're about to work the craziest fucking year that anyone's worked, because they're going to be in all kinds. They're going to be in Japan at some point, and then they're going to be, where did they announce the Ring of Honor show? Lowell, Massachusetts?
Massachusetts, yep.
It's going to be Lowell, Massachusetts, fighting a 7-star match, and then going over to Japan, and then going to all the AEW rings. They're going to have one of the wildest worker years of any tag team, and I think that's a lot for, I just hope that Dax's injury is not super serious, and he's able to keep going, because at the pace that they're going, they're on pace for one fucking hell of a year.
It's going to be hard to not say that they're not tag team of the year, right?
And like, on top of that, individually speaking, and this is nothing against Cash Wheeler, Dax Harwood's having one of the best years in wrestling.
Because his solo stuff
has been terrific this year. So those guys have just been, anytime they've been on a card, they are just a fucking home run every time. And I just hope that they stay healthy and they're able to complete this year. And I hope we get some more, you know, dream matchups with them this year, because right now what we're witnessing is the peak of FTR. And this is awesome.
Top guys time.
They are top guys time. 100%.
Yeah. And if anything, maybe they keep Bell collected and get these titles off the Bucks. Who knows? Shout out to Mike Coppinger before we hit break, though. It was like, you know what? AEW has more belts than the WBA. It should pop me. But
he's
they do.
Not,
like,
he's not wrong. There's not a wrong. Lot of belts.
There's a lot of belts, just their belts. Now it's just like, wait,
now
I got to know all the Japanese belts.
Now you
got to
know Japan
all the...
Oh, God, it is turning into boxing belts.
Oh, my God. There's just a million titles.
Wait until AEW's broadcast on like 3 or 4 different networks.
If you are a fan that knew nothing about the indies, but started like just watching AEW and be like, hey, this is cool. Like, I'm a CM Punk fan. I'm a Bryan Danielson fan. Like, let me tune in. You know, the hell with WWE. Let me tune in. And you're just like, what the hell is going on here? Everybody got a belt. You get a belt. So, yeah, it is a little crazy. I mean, I'm not one of those people. So I can follow all this.
It all depends on what you do with the belt.
That is key. Got to make it feel special. So let's hit the break.
And at least there's no broadcast politics you got to deal with. At least FTR is not on DAZN and they got to go fight Top Rank, you know?
Anything is better in boxing.
FTR wouldn't be on DAZN, but that's beside the point.
But let's hit the break, come back, talk about another belt.
More belts.
AEW All Atlantic.
Hey,
title.
We get belts for this podcast? We should get belts.
Tony's your guy now, right? Like, you and Tony are like friends. Like, Tony watched. You watched the Avalanche.
Hey, I got it. Tony still. Hey, Tony, you were talking with Andreas about trios belts. I got a trio right fucking here.
Let's go. House of Black. The fuck out of here.
Get out of here.
We'll take them.
Death Triangle?
No problem.
More like,
what?
You're dead. Triangle. Sorry, I couldn't come up with anything better.
It's all right. I have a better triangle button on my PlayStation.
Oh, wow. That was way better. I suck.
Take that.
I'm just going to sit here and just go, baby, over and over again, and just claim that Adam Cole stole my gimmick.
It's like Roman Reigns when he said nothing in the promos, and then he just added, believe that. Like, back in the head.
Oh, God. Oh,
that was the only thing he said.
Those are the dark times.
Days.
And then John Cena had to come back and go, hold up, dude. Hold up. I got it. I got to work you, dude. Come on now.
Oh, man. Those are the days. Let's hit the break. We'll come back. Talk about AEW All Atlantic title and the rest of the matches on the card. Don't go anywhere. Right back after this.
Acknowledge this break.
All right, we are back to finish the second half. AEW Forbidden Door.
It's the Forbidden Door. It's like we're in Hogwarts or something.
Yeah, I feel like a drawbridge has to come down. It's not even a regular door. It's like...
You just hear like crows out in the distance. You know, just the Forbidden Door. It's like the fucking... Like vampires are gonna show up.
It's gonna get so weird.
It's gonna get weird.
I just picture like Castlevania.
Yeah,
like the Castlevania.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening.
Oh man, no. So we left off talking about titles. We're gonna start off talking about titles.
Does AEW have titles?
What?
Wait.
Not only do they have titles, Cole. Let me enlighten the people. They have new titles.
New title.
And Tony Khan confirmed to us, when he came to Blue Wire Studios, that they have more titles just waiting.
Yep.
Just in the back. Like, you got that many belts.
I just hope eventually, like, we get all these belts so that my dream is that one wrestler in particular just ends up capturing all of them and just has a comically...
Ultimo Dragon. Like, the arms out, just belts all up and down the torso.
Yep. That's what I need. Yes. I need it for the memes. Thank you. Thank you, Tony. Sign Cole.
At this rate, it'll definitely be John Moxley. But we'll get there. So back, Clark Connors, who's in this match? Because Ishii had to pull out.
injury.
Then Malachi Black and Mero. Bless Clark Connor's heart. He tried.
Hey, you know what? He did a really good job in this match. And you know what? He was winning the crowd. You want to know why?
It was like an underdog because story. They cheer for everyone.
Because the crowd loves the dog, Kel. And you know what they were all saying? He got that dog in him. That's what they were saying. And Cole. I believe he ended up getting the table spot on Miro.
He did. They threw him a bone.
They did, which was good for him. Again, like, did anyone expect Clark Connors to win?
No.
This was going to always be about Pac, Malachi Black, and Miro. But he was drawn into this spot as an unknown, and I give him credit for making an impression. He made an impression on me.
He did. But I was like, damn, this kid is out of place. It just, and his gimmick is a little weird.
It's a little corny, but you know what? He did a good job. He showed off some athleticism.
Yes. Everyone else balled out. Oh. Great match. A little weird and rushed finish to me. Like, I understand everyone hits their spots. Everyone hits their spots, right? Like, everyone's going. But again, like, it just felt like a little bit clunky at the end. And then, like, the Black Arrow, which wasn't a Black Arrow. He hit, like, a 450, like, at the end. Pac hits the 450 onto Black. And for some reason, so before this, Miro has his finisher on
Pac,
I believe. So he has Pac and a finisher. Drops him, picks him up again for the finisher. Takes Black Mass, straight to the grill, right? All right, now we're spamming finishers down the road. I love it. Takes Black Mass. Connors is there. Now, Aleister Black really just has to hit him with Black Mass. Malachi Black has to hit him with Black Mass. No. Right? He doesn't. Decides to finish him with a submission. And I'm just like, the fuck? Why? Like, Black Mass is your thing. So he goes in submission. That impact to now miraculously, after being put in two, I'm calling him the accolade. The mama, Miro's mama called him an accolade. That's just the accolade. Two accolades, back to back, getting saved. 30 seconds later, he's climbing the top rope. Maybe he doesn't have enough energy to do the Black Arrow. Cool. He does like a 540 or whatever.
He did the 450. Yeah, he did the 450. Yeah.
Cool. Breaks up the submission. Now you bring up submission, and it's just like, okay, I guess Clark Connors is like weakened. So then he goes, puts the submission on Clark Connors, immediate tap. And I'm just like, what the fuck was Aleister Black thinking? Because at this point, the person who's weak is Pac. You hit the most dangerous guy in the match with your best move, and he's out of here. And you got the weak link, and you don't hit him with your best move? It made no fucking sense. Like, just the logic behind this end sequence made no sense. Amazing match other than that. And I wouldn't have mentioned this at all, Cole. I would have let it slide. If the rest of the night, this shit didn't become a running theme of really, really good matches, leaving me like, what the fuck was that final sequence?
Yeah, I didn't have as much of a problem with the final sequence. I mean, I think Clark...
Right man won.
Well, and the right man, I think, had to eat the finish. So,
yeah.
Ultimately, that's what I think it was about. I definitely think, like, for sure, like, Pac... I mean, Pac was in that was in Miro's submission for quite a while, and he managed to get up pretty quick after Miro got hit with the mist.
Oh, that's what it was. What, even Black Mask caught him with the mist?
Yes. He got the spit to the face.
Yes.
And then that was it for Miro. He was gonzo. And then Malachi had Connors in the submission, Pac did the splash, and then he just finished off the work that I got. I'm calling him Aleister Black. God damn it, Kel.
The Malachi.
House of Black. but ultimately, I think maybe I'm just fine with it because I'm happy for who won. I think it's nice to see Pac get this title and start having a run. I think
he needs a belt.
He needs a belt. There just wasn't. There must have, like, I mean, he came into AEW pretty early in the game. It was back when
first pay per view,
and this is back when one. It's just one championship, right? So ultimately, you know, who's gonna get it, right? And we talk about guys getting their due, right? So, you know, Miro's just coming back. Malakai Black, obviously, you have so many things you can do with him that he doesn't necessarily need the title. Does he deserve a title at some point? Sure. Yep. Does he need it? No. They've got such a cool, gimmicky team that there's a lot of places you can take that. Obviously, he's got Buddy Matthews and Brody King. So, like, keep throwing them in matches because they're awesome. Yep. You know, this allows for more programs with Miro if you want. If you want some more Pac and Miro, Pac can take this belt internationally, which, you know, Tony Khan and I believe AEW has kind of said, like, the purpose of this belt is to kind of, like, where the TNT belt will kind of be like a television championship, this feels like a belt that's going to travel. This is a belt that's going to have other people from other promotions cross over and fight for. And this belt's going to be defended in other promotions as well, is what they've made this sound like. We shall see.
Too many damn belts, if that's the case. But yeah, I mean,
if that's the case, but that sounds like an exciting proposition. Like, this would be a cool belt to go, like, go take over to Japan and go defend.
Only if he loses it over there, right? If there's no threat of taking it and losing it somewhere, then what are we doing?
Unless you're bringing that person back over here, and that allows for, you know, where Forbidden Door is a once a year thing. Say you have a New Japan guy just coming to make a little tour of America for 3 months with the All-Atlantic Championship. That could be really cool. I think that there's a lot of potential there and a lot of potential to put, you know, guy, like, we're in the internet world. There's a lot of ways for wrestlers to get over. You don't need to just get TV time anymore in WWE, right? Like, you do something cool in New Japan, it's going to travel, right? So, like, you know, you get a championship and you're in New Japan, you go tour over AEW for 2 or 3 months, get over with the United States crowd, bring that back over to Japan. It's a win-win for everybody. So, and Pac's, I mean, Pac is, what can't Pac do?
And that's the key.
That's the thing, is he can wrestle anybody you want. So he's the perfect first champion for this belt if it's going to be used as they intend. That's my feeling.
100%. Next match, Darby Allin, Sting, Shingo, who's big as hell. Now, there's the Young Bucks and El Fantasmo. LP. Man, Sting's crazy. Let's start there.
Can I do this? It's Sting! That was so cool!
The editing, the fake Sting, and the bleachers.
That was great. I feel like they didn't give that enough play. Like, no, they weren't, like, on commentary, I felt like they didn't really, like, go into the whole, like, he's in the rafters, oh my god! Or WCW, isn't that cool? Like, that was fucking,
and then
sick.
He fucking teleported. Like, how about that? Like, he's in the rafters.
Maybe Sting's a wizard. Think about that.
The OG.
Do we need Chris wizard. Jericho versus Sting? Who's the real wizard?
In
a wizard match? A wizard on a pole match?
Oh my god, a wizard staff?
That's the next belt.
Yes, that's it. MJF has a ring. Okay, there's belts and there's rings, by the way. There's belts. There's an FTW.
That ring's gone missing, though. We can't talk about that ring.
FTW belts.
We refuse to comment on MJF.
God, I forgot the FTW belt is, like, still around. There's a million fucking belts. There's belts. There's rings. Might as well have a wizard staff. There's Owen Hart belts. Yeah. There's belts for fucking everything. Yeah.
But anyways, Sting. Go ahead, Kel.
Sting. No, I didn't grow up a little Stinger. I know. Right? Like,
this
I was
well documented.
Like, yes, he's not, like, my guy. I wasn't, like, super huge on Sting. I like Sting with the blonde fucking flat top more than I like
Surfer,
you know.
Sting.
Yeah.
California then, Sting, dude.
Yeah, when he had the American flag joint with the blue and red face. Amazing. Like, the whole Crow shit was always whack to me. I do like him, like, you know, menacingly just being up in the rafters with the bat. But once he came down, I, like, lost the nostalgia of that. I was like, oh, he's just back. And, like, oh, NWO, scared of this guy in the rafters. And I watched The Crow. I was like, he clearly just swaggered.
I disagree with your take, but I understand what you're saying by, like, he gets to the ring and then he's a wrestler.
Yeah.
But that's also like that's also like the Undertaker. It's the same thing with the Undertaker, right?
That's fair. So, like, I mean, Undertaker was never, again, Sting wasn't bad. I just wasn't a Stinger, right? Like, Sting is, like, some people's favorite fucking wrestler. Like, Undertaker's not my favorite wrestler because I was just like,
Sting was my guy's kid. I mean,
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people like, Justin Ivey in the Rat Pack,
and a lot of that too, like with Sting, and like, I just grew up in the right time where it was like, okay, the face paint was cool, the whole Raptors thing was cool, like the mysterious kind of like broody aura was super cool. Yeah. The mysterious broody aura was super cool, and then on top of that, the video game, he was like the best character to be because he'd do the whoa. Like, you'd be like, oh, this is great. Yeah. Scorpion Deathlock, Scorpion Death Drop. Like,
he had cool moveset.
He had just a really good, like, wrestlers kind of.
That's also another thing. Like, growing up, it was like Scorpion Deathlock versus Sharpshooter. And I was like, how the fuck did this guy steal Bret Hart's finisher? Like, let's be real here. And I was just like, it really put me off the Sting. I was like, this guy just steals everything.
But you know
he stole the
Sting,
fucking finisher.
Sting is,
he stole this.
Sting is here to be, what is he? He's 63 years old? Is that correct?
I believe so. It's been 25 years since
he's been
around. What
has he done in the last two pay-per-views he's been on? He's jumped off of shit.
Wild shit.
You're crazy, Sting.
To be fair, from day one, he's been doing wild shit. Him and Darby had like a crazy match that was like versus
God bless
Team Taz.
Sting owned this match, by the way. Sting own this match, and him playing off of El Phantasmo and the Young Bucks was so goddamn good, and it was like it was the perfect mix of old school wrestling where Sting literally just takes the super kick and just starts hulking up for all intents and purposes. That was fantastic. That was so good, and the whole nipple twist thing. Oh, great. The fact that he forgot that the nipple twist was his next move and he stepped out of the ring and then he stepped back in and did the nipple twist. God bless you, Sting.
Twist was incredible. I was like, yo, I'm not a Sting guy. I had to ask the Rat Pack chat. I was like, is in kayfabe Sting not supposed to have nipples? Like, is this like a thing that I missed in my childhood? Like, he's a phantom of some sorts, and he has no nipples.
Like, nah, he's just like, what the fuck is this? What is this stupid shit? I'm from the 90s, dude.
Yeah. The match was very entertaining.
Like the Young Bucks, you could say whatever we want for booking and all this stuff. And you know,
I'm a huge fan of the Bucks.
If Young Bucks went to, you put the Young Bucks in the match, money. Money every time.
There's a case that the Young Bucks are the greatest tag team of all time.
Yes.
And I wouldn't even blink an eye. Like, yeah. Like, who else you put? Like, cool. Yeah, they're probably better than every tag team you can mention. Road Warriors are great. I'm not sure if they're the Young Bucks match for match. Gimmick for, like, yeah, their gimmick is, like, kind of corny and hokey, but that's the times we're in. Like, their gimmick is just making fun of nostalgic shit. And spamming stuff. Like, their gimmick is to do everything everyone hates. And that's why they're damn good as heels.
They have a move called the Meltzer Driver.
Driver.
That tells you all you need to know about the Young Bucks. It is it is targeted. Everything they do, what I appreciate about the Bucks is everything the Bucks do is calculated. They do everything for a reason. It's just like everything has a purpose, whether it's to generate heat, it's to generate a positive reaction from a crowd, it's to get a match, to kick into the next dimension. Everything they do has a purpose. There's no wasted movement in a Young Bucks match. I think that's what I enjoy about them the most. And when they're in a match that with a tag team that can go at their speed, a la the Lucha Bros, it's fantastic. And in this case, they were throwing a curveball, right? You get a 63-year-old man in there. That's a curveball. You got to figure out how to handle this. And what they decided to do with Sting and the Young Bucks was just fantastic. The no-selling of the super kicks was too good. That was fucking classic. Yeah. That was so perfect.
Double Scorpion Death Drop.
They start the super kick party, and they get to Sting, and Sting's like, I'm not having that shit. And there's only a few people who can get away with that hulking up shit, and you have to be from that era, and Sting is that guy.
No, hands down. So it's my favorite match of the night. Fuck it. Give Sting the MVP of this card. it was fun. I was...
Tons of fun. In a match where, again, like, Young Bucks, again, like, they get stuck in these matches, and you're like, okay, the Young Bucks are on this card. I'm not, like, I know it's a Young Bucks match. They're going to do something cool, but, like, do I have a reason to be invested in this? And no matter what, Young Bucks just find a reason to get you invested in it.
Every time they deliver. And then Shota Umino catches the fireball to the grill from Chris Jericho. Just letting you know that Umino is going to be a future top guy because he's just around a bunch of top guys. But right now, kid, gotta take this fireball.
Why is Chris Jericho all over this show?
He had 5 appearances, if I counted correctly.
Why?
That's a good question. I could tell you why. Then you got to tell me if it's necessary.
Okay.
He's here 5 times because of Blood and Guts on Wednesday.
Yeah, that's my problem.
Is this a pay-per-view?
That's my problem.
Or is this a giant promo for Dynamite?
That is a problem. And that is like an overall issue that definitely harms this show, especially towards the end. But Chris Jericho didn't. What does this helps nobody.
What did Umino do to you?
What this helps? The only way this helps, and the only way this works, is if you're gonna have a match at Wrestle Kingdom, and Chris Jericho's going over there, and Shota Umino is gonna go over there, and Jericho's gonna put Umino over.
Oh, I mean that'd be incredible.
But that's the only reason you do. Why are you lighting a fireball in Shota Umino's face? Why? The guy just had a show out on American soil. We were just talking about it earlier. The guy looks like Tanahashi. The guy looks like the next superstar in New Japan. Why are you burying him with a fireball? This was very frustrating. The whole, like, and like, again, and like, I love what Chris Jericho brings to any program. I do. But there was too much Chris Jericho in this card. Way too much. And I get that there's a feud going on with the Jericho Appreciation Society and Blackpool Combat Club. I get that there's a feud there. This is about AEW and New Japan. This is not about Blood and Guts. Lighting a fireball on Shota Umino does nothing for either of them. If anything, it hurts Shota Umino. That is my problem. So unless it's going to come back and Shota Umino is going to be like, Jericho, okay, first you go over to New Japan and you throw me in the Walls of Jericho, which they showed the footage of. So this is why I think this is on purpose. But again, if it's not on purpose, I'm going to be mad. But they did that, and now he's lit a fireball and Shota Umino's face. There's got to be payback for this, and there's got to be a way to put Shota Umino over in the situation. I will let the dust settle and see where it goes, but we better circle back to this, especially for Shota Umino. That's my thoughts.
No,
I had some thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the kid's going to be a star, and I share your same sentiment on Jericho, right? And it's one of those things where it's like, you don't have to. No, that's my – it's well unnecessary.
It's well established. We've seen you light the fireball. We know you're a wizard, Jericho. We know. We know you're a wizard. And that's fine. And we know you're going to be at Blood and Guts on Wednesday. And we know that that match is going to be awesome. That's great. Thank you.
We didn't need someone later on in this show who I wanted to get fireballed. And I'll get to that.
Okay. I'm excited to hear that.
Yep. So then we have Thunder Rosa and Toni Storm.
Indeed.
Good match.
It was a good match.
I'm not like overly big on Thunder Rosa as champion, but you know what? It doesn't bother me. I thought Tony could have won, and maybe Tony could be a better champ. But at this point, they're giving Thunder Rosa her due. The division is not like stupid deep yet. If Jade ain't ready to take the main belt, then really you're just recycling it anyway. Like it's in my mind, the B belt anyway. I think again, might be WWE brain, and it doesn't matter here.
Okay.
But Thunder Rosa is holding the workers' working belt.
Yes.
And Jade Cargill is holding the big belt, the sports entertainment belt, the make you care, the superstar belt, right? Like, and usually it's opposite. Usually you hold
whether
lesser
they intend
title.
It to be that way or not. I think, again, a belt is dictated by its champion, and that's currently where we're at.
Correct. Britt Baker was not holding the workers title. She worked with that title. It was the main belt. It felt like the main belt when Britt had it, you know, early. Towards the end, it got a little crazy. But it's one of those things. It's like everyone now holding the belt just feels like a secondary champion. Unless they bring in someone like Sasha or someone like big time, it's going to feel secondary. Well, like Ember Moon is not big time.
I think there's some interesting dynamics, I think, with this match. I think, first of all, to the match and to the competitors themselves. Yeah, great. I mean, these are two of the best workers in wrestling right now. Like anytime you throw Thunder Rosa in a match, you're going to probably get a good workers match. You throw Toni Storm in a match, you're going to get a good workers match. And it was a very good match. I think Rosa's struggling as champion because she hasn't had that feud yet. Like, there hasn't been that extra layer. Yes, Thunder Rosa can wrestle a good match. She needs that feud that's going to put her over as a champion. Which is funny enough, because what put Britt Baker over? Thunder Rosa, right? And that is what AEW has kind of struggled to do, especially with this belt, is to create a compelling story and a compelling feud with this belt. Especially as of late. And Thunder Rosa, I think, has been hampered by I think the Marina Shafir match really hurt. And the controversy around that, whether Thunder Rosa was dogging it, for lack of a better word. The Nyla Rose thing was not good. The Serena Deeb match was great, but the build up to that was kind of confusing, and no one was quite sure who to root for because Serena cut a great promo, but not at the service of the feud.
And I didn't think she had like a real chance of winning it anyway. So that felt flat.
No, it did as a feud for them together, right? Like, I think it was good for Serena Deeb, but it was not good for the feud. They have trouble telling stories with these women in AEW, I feel like.
Well, there's.
We're looking
again.
I feel like
the company is very good, right? Very good. Whenever you have a singular voice, you can't do everything.
Yep.
It's the problem with WWE, right? They have a million writers. They have, you know, people who book shit and produce shows and do all this stuff. At the end of the day, it's a singular voice of decision making. AEW just has a singular voice. They don't even have the sounding board underneath, but really Vince doesn't either, because he just vetoes that shit, rips it up anyway.
With one caveat, I will say before I let you continue, with the caveat that the wrestlers have a little bit more input on.
Hands down. And I'm not sure if that's good or bad, because it's great for the veterans of television wrestling. It is great for the veterans who know how to navigate it. Those without weekly television experience, sometimes shit goes left. We end up with Sammy Guevara and whatever. We end up even with the stuff with Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky. And those are veterans of the sport. But shit can still go wrong. You know, like there's one voice, and the man works tirelessly. But so does Vincent Kennedy McMahon. And it's one of those things, like, it's always tough when there's one voice. They didn't start off with one voice. They are now at one voice.
That's fair.
And that is tough.
Yeah, I think I'm sorry. Continue.
We'll see where that leads. But fine match.
Yeah. I think just we've got to find a feud for Thunder Rosa. That's good. Yeah. Now that said, it sounds like there's some potential for her going and taking this belt, some other promotions, and maybe going.
I don't need everyone to go to a different promotion. That's another thing. Like, this is cool. This nostalgia. Like, I don't want to follow AEW Dark every day. I don't want to follow every ROH show. I don't want to follow every New Japan show. Granted, I do. I don't want to have to follow like Stardom. Like, if I'm a normal casual fan, give it to me on this show. That's like me watching, you know, I'm a reality TV head. But like, if I had to watch fucking Married at First Sight And then they're like, yeah, cool, but we're going to send this cast to Married at First Sight Australia. Yeah, I watch that, but most people don't. And then you can only see this stuff on YouTube. And then guess what? We're going to come back next week. You don't know what the fuck happened, but stuff is all going to be changed. It's just like, don't force me to watch like all, like you have a show. Yeah. Give me a show.
That's fair. Well, again, it also like goes into, I think where that becomes a problem too, is like it goes into like the whole, this is the workers' belt when like this is the champion of your women's division.
Company. Yes.
These are a little bit different stakes that we're talking about. So she's a good feud. And then overall, Forbidden Door is going to run into this issue where women's matches are going to be a problem.
Yeah.
So unless you're going to throw in something like a Stardom in there.
Yeah, Shimmer. Right? Maybe you'll get another. They will get a company to partner with them.
That they need it, and they need it. And I think it also hurt this match because this was the only women's match on the card. You're going to give a little bit more credibility to this women's division. There's got to be more matches.
Yeah.
And they've
I mean, the card was long as hell already, Cole.
It was. I'm not saying like necessarily ad match, but maybe you said to get QT Marshall out of here.
Exactly.
But yes, that's that. They need to figure that problem out going forward.
Next match. Are you ready for this? Another belt.
Uh-huh.
We have
this one from New Japan.
Yes, we have Will Ospreay versus Orange Cassidy. I said Sting. Sting had the most fun match. This was the best match.
This match fucking ruled.
Will Ospreay could do a 5-star match in his sleep. It's just, I wish he was a better human being. I do. But sometimes people aren't, and they're really fucking good at their jobs. And Will Ospreay is one of those people where at any given moment, he'll remind you, I'm one of the best wrestlers on this planet. Yeah, I used to do flippy shit. And you know, I love flippy shit.
We love the flippity dippity.
Now, he is an all-around wrestler, and he's better than a lot of people. And Orange Cassidy is one hell of a wrestler. Again, shout out to Justin Ivey, versus Rat Pack, telling me to watch some of his matches. Fire Ant, Chikara.
Yes.
Deep cut.
Yes.
And putting me onto Orange Cassidy and him actually wrestling before the gimmick. And we saw that here. And these two put on one hell of a show. And man, it was just from go to the final just sequence. This was a match that was perfect. Shout out to Dre Sporting News and you know the whole crew over there. That's great. They're out of their damn mind. They rated 9 matches on here in A. or above. Like, okay, chill. This, they gave it A+. This is like, they gave 5 matches an A+. Like, what the hell is an A+? Everything gets A+. But this match was damn A+. Like, if I had to give 5 stars
this goes
on
into
this
my
card,
universe of, if you want to protect all the finishers, why not just keep hitting finishers?
Yeah, this was an A+, though. Like, an A was FTR, and that was an amazing match. Great match for them. This shit's an A+. This is a 5-star match. This is 8 stars you put in the Tokyo Dome, Meltzer. This was an incredible
12
match.
And a half stars.
Stars. Now I'm trying to get him to not block me. Let me not make fun of him. We're still trying to figure out why he blocked me. So, but this was an amazing match. It deserves all the credit. These are the matches that you know people dream about when we have these crossovers. And when Ospreay comes over and you're like, yeah, Ospreay's like, he's still this big thing, right? And he has a program over there and he's not too far removed from being champion and everything. And you're just like, oh, Orange Cassidy. And AEW really hasn't figured out where Orange Cassidy fits in terms of like a title guy. They get him perfectly right for feuds and matches. And I love the gimmick. I just don't know if they know if he's a champion above a mid-card champion or even a mid-card champion. And we haven't seen him hold gold. We don't know what he is. We don't know if he's more Danhausen, like character actor who doesn't need a belt, or is he good enough to be champion, or will they make him champion? We don't know. But this showed that, like, yo, he, when he needs to, he can go. And this was a banger.
There are people who can live in that stratosphere. Some people can't live in that weird mid-card title, no title. Orange Cassidy can live there. And that's why, you know.
But can he break out of there?
Does he?
Can he vacation somewhere else?
Does he need to?
No, he's never going to get stale, in my opinion.
Right.
So no,
and that's
but why people strive to, right? Like, why are you in the business if you don't want to be world champion? why look every day and be like, yo, I'm getting a top three pop in this company, top five pop in this company, but I have not one title reign? Sooner or later, just as a competitor or someone in business, you're like, I'm due for a promotion. Like, yeah, like I'm getting a top five pop since I entered. I put my hands in my pockets and people lose their mind. Like, yeah, eventually I don't gotta live in the title scene, but I'd like to take a vacation there. Like, can I hold?
That's fair.
We got 18 million belts. Can I hold one?
Again, we're not inside the mind of an Orange Cassidy, right? So we don't,
not at all.
We don't, you know,
I'm just speaking as a competitor.
Of course. Again, of course. But I think there are many wrestler in this company. Him and a Malakai Black who can live in that in between, right?
Sure.
They don't need to necessarily be in a title picture.
Malakai Black needs to be in a title. Like, he has to be the guy at some point because he was the guy before. That makes sense.
But Orange Cassidy is like the next degree of this. I just mean, like, you can serve matches without necessarily having a title be in there, right? Cassidy puts his hands in his pockets and it's fucking awesome. The second this match was made, I thought it was interesting that there was I feel like there was a vibe of confusion a little bit. Like, this is what we're using Ospreay for, is Orange Cassidy. Yep. And I said, yes, this is exactly what we're using Orange Cassidy for, is Will Ospreay.
One of those people 3 years ago before I watched the car
That's the thing, is Orange Cassidy, you get you get lulled into a daze thinking Orange Cassidy is just the character. You forget Orange Cassidy, the wrestler, is crazy and fucking great.
Incredible.
He's incredible. And he was the perfect person to put in the ring with Will Ospreay. Is it necessarily what you think of as a dream match? And is that a criticism? Okay, sure. But are you going to get a fucking banger with Orange Cassidy and Will Ospreay? Hell yeah. So as soon as this match was put on the card, this was my expectation of being the match of the night. My mind, it was the match of the night. Golly, Will Ospreay was amazing, and the middle finger spot in the pocket. By the way, was so good. Was so, and his face just like, oh, look at what I have. Oh, so
such a great heel. Really, he should never be a babyface.
No, I don't think he can be.
He was like,
not at this point in his career.
Anymore.
Yeah,
not anymore.
He's hit that Roman Reigns. Like, can Roman Reigns go back? Not really.
It's tough. It's gonna be tough.
Yeah.
Trent and Beretta come out to save Cassidy. That's a United Empire. Jumps in. Beretta's pulling double duty. Whatever. So
there might be a typo on there.
Trent Beretta and who else came out? It was the Best Friends.
Yeah, it was the Best Friends.
So Beretta and Trent Beretta and what's the other kid's name? What's the other guy's name?
I can't remember off the top of my head. Trent Anyways, Beretta. The important part is
nonetheless, the Best Friends come out.
Shibata.
Shibata then comes out. Shibata music hits. I did not know that was his music. Very happy to see him.
Crowd loses their fucking mind.
Because again, it's great for the indie crowd. This shit pops in Chicago because people went because they know all this shit, right? Like, AEW at its core understands we are Mark's company. And we are going to feed our base. And people say whatever the fuck they want about AEW. I criticize them to high heavens because there's stuff to criticize. The best thing they do, in which I will never say they're a bad company, they're never like a shit. No, I criticize because there's way to improve. Outside of that, they are all A-OK in my book because they know who their base is and they feed it. And they feed it well. And WWE has lost sight of that shit many moons ago. If kids are your base, then you put people over who kids love. And those who scare kids, so people who they love can go over. They don't do that anymore. They don't put over the feel-good stories. They put over whoever the hell Vince likes. So, like, there's no reason to not put Big E over Roman Reigns, right? Because kids love Big E. The man throws pancakes and other assorted breakfast dishes. He wears highlighter colors. He does the splits. He has unicorns. He's everything that kids love on YouTube.
Wear Seinfeld quotes on his
so their parents are like, yo, that's deep cut. We love this guy too. No, there's no reason that guy's not the face of your company and he's not the next John Cena, right? No, only because
Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, look, for the 18th millionth
time. What about The Rock? Does The Rock want to come back?
Oh my God. No, Goldberg will though. So it's just like a bunch of people kids don't even care about or know about. Because guess what? They weren't even thought of when these people were fucking wrestling or debuting or making a name for themselves. If your target audience is children, like you say, then how about you build some stars that these children know, that's been around or made, you know, their zenith of their career was around when these children were alive. You're bringing back people when their parents were children. You know how many people from my childhood my kids care about? Zero. Absolutely none. I try to get them to watch Home Alone and like cool shit. I tell my daughter, like, yo, Boy Meets World is incredible. She's like, yeah, I just watched Girl Meets World. I'm like, no, no, you do not know the real Corey and Topanga.
Correct.
So like, she's like, oh, Corey's a great teacher. Help, blasphemy. You know nothing of Mr. Feeny. Feeny. She don't know nothing about that. So kids don't care. Give them new people. My daughter loved the Sasha Banks, the Becky Lynch. She loves the people who were growing when she was growing. You could bring back Lita right now. She wouldn't give two shits. WWE doesn't feed their base at all. They say something to their base, they don't feed them. Because if you fed them, it'd be new stars. It'd be Austin Theory because he has a social platform. And you actually let him go live on Snapchat or TikTok during the events. And kids would buy into that because they understand those platforms. During his little face thing, like if they could see that real time on TikTok, that should be dope. You build stars like this. Bianca's a star for this age. Little girls love the bright stuff and the makeup. And every girl watches the YouTube makeup tutorial shit. Everyone. She changes up her makeup constantly. She does homemade stitching and earrings. And how is that not a sub channel? Like, you don't know your base at all. WWE fucks up constantly. That's why they're horrible. In terms of like storytelling, they don't know their base. An 80-year-old man is telling them how to market to children. You're lost.
Fundamental issue.
Yes. Tony Khan knows his base. At his heart of hearts, Tony Khan is a smart. And he markets to
He knows his base because he's part of it.
Yes. And that's cool. Now in 20 years, when he's longer and he's out of touch with that, we'll see.
Gonna get tricky.
But for right now, this motherfucker's in the thick of it.
Here comes Shibata.
And he's great. Shibata comes out, huge pop. Amazing.
Gets the sunglasses.
Yes. We'll see what that leads to, but now we're excited. I'm excited for G1. Next match, Zack Sabre Jr. versus the surprise new entrant of the Blackpool Combat Club. Who could it be? We knew. We knew all along.
Swiss.
Hey. Even though JR did call him Swiss Superman. Shout out JR. Bringing it back from WWE. Like, y'all don't know this. Claudio, no longer Cesaro. Claudio debuts.
Castagnoli.
Claudio's just, I mean, Brian Danielson out of calling a favor. Brian Danielson was like, hey, I got a guy.
You know, if you're going to have a match, right, Zack Sabre Jr., obviously the dream match is Brian Danielson. He called in whatever the free agent bucks he's got in Madden or NBA 2K. We got 99 overall. He found 98 overall. He found the next best guy for this kind of match.
Good match.
Cool.
I mean, it's not like exceptional match in my opinion.
I thought it was really good.
Oh, I've seen Claudio have better. He's just getting started.
For a guy who hadn't wrestled in a bit, he definitely took some time off.
Oh, it was great. Good match. Him and Zach worked like they should have worked. He has way better in him, and we're about to see a lot better.
Well, I think, and also too, like it's the style thing, right? They were both trying to play at, you know, Zack Sabre Jr. plays at this speed, right? And I think a lot of it is Claudio is coming in and going, okay, well, like let's go at this speed, let's match this speed. And I think, you know, Claudio obviously has been in so many kind of different matches throughout his career that and on Wednesday we're gonna see some of it.
Yeah, so I thought this was a good match, a great and amazing debut. And it's the appetizer. And that's what it was. And then, again, cool, we get to the end of it. Claudio looked happy, right? Like, he looked like, that's great. This is where I told you someone needed a fireball to the face. Because JR, at the end of this match, constantly kept saying, this is pro wrestling, not sports entertainment. Chris Jericho's gimmick right now is all about the importance of sports entertainment. I understand he's hype over Claudio, and now he could be a professional wrestler. Jericho should have came out, defended his honor. Fireball to you, Jim Ross. Right to the face. Oh, if I'm going to see Jericho, yes. JR on commentary was shitting all over sports entertainment. This whole match. The whole match.
Okay.
Jericho, you defend sports entertainment's honor. If anyone was going to catch a fireball, good old JR should have took one to the face.
I thought you were going to just say that Claudio should have gotten the fireball to the face.
No, Jim Ross should have got the fireball to the face for shitting on sports entertainment all
match. I don't want Jim Ross in a feud. I don't point.
I don't need a feud. It's
what's
one of
he
those
supposed
like
to do? Just get a fireball to the face and be okay
fireball
with
fireball to the face, and Chris Jericho should have said, keep sports entertainment's name out of your damn mouth, and then walk to the back. That should have been the segment. Don't you dare talk about sports entertainment, sir. That's all I need. That's what I needed.
Look,
from Jericho.
I worry about where that would go, but I'm not mad at it. That's pretty
I just
good.
Need it as a one-off.
That's some
That's
good
it.
Stuff. That's some
it.
Good stuff.
That's all I needed. Next match, Jay White, Fatal 4-Way. Jay White coming in as champion versus Okada. In which, again, having the Japanese announcer is impeccable.
Okada!
That was yeah. Hangman Adam Page and Adam Cole. No, he's an imposter. We'll keep that for you. Adam. Okada's entrance is amazing. The rope was fucking incredible. Jay White looks like $1 million.
That crowd was in fuego for Okada. But then we go on to the match. What'd you think?
I thought it was phenomenal. I should not be saying that with a sigh. I thought it was great. Mm-hmm. Flabby Adam Cole is just one hell of a worker. If he ever gets a sick pack, I'm going to cry because the man is great.
Don't do it.
And I don't want the people online to have the satisfaction. You keep it. I wish he can go further and get like the Tyson Fury muffin top just to piss people off and still be such a great worker, right? Every spot hit, everything was great. The pacing felt great. Didn't seem like too long of a match. I was really into it. And then the end confused me. It seems as though there's an injury.
Yes.
So we give.
I think we have to give some credence here.
But even if there's an injury, this is my criticism of AEW. Wins and losses shouldn't matter so much that you fuck up a finish because of it. If Adam Cole is the one injured at the end of this match, right? And Jay White and Okada are in the same promotion. He just beat Okada 2 weeks ago. He hits Okada with the Blade Runner. Pin Okada. Like, why do you have to unnaturally make it weird to Adam Cole, who didn't have a finisher hit on him at all, who just kind of collapsed because you saved him before the finisher was hit, right? Like, he was about to get the Rainmaker, collapsed because you came in to hit the Blade Runner, kind of saved him, and then pinned him without any finisher or anything being hit on. Why? Just pin the guy you hit your finisher on. It shouldn't matter that much. Make it make sense, especially on an audible. I don't get it. They were so stuck on Adam Cole is going to take the pin. Adam Cole is going to take the pin. Adam Cole is going to take the pin. That when shit went awry, you couldn't audible? It made no sense. And it left everyone confused, from my knowledge, to injury or no injury. You had an out. You hit a guy with your finisher. No one was around. Pin the guy.
The other part, too, with, like, calling an audible there is, like, Hangman Adam Page is in there, too. You got three people. Just continue the match between the three of you. It's okay.
Pin the guy you hit your finisher on.
Well, or if, like, if you got to keep it going, right? Because, like, here's my criticism of it. Okada is in the building. How many Rainmakers were landed? If you can't remember one, that's because there wasn't a Rainmaker.
There was one.
He attempted.
But it was no one was landed by Hangman Page before he attempted his buckshot. And the announcer was like, he hit a discus lariat. It's like, no, he hit the man with his own finisher. It's like he hit a Rainmaker, went out and tried
My
to do
point
his
being though.
Thing. But yeah, no.
Okada didn't Okada do Rainmaker. The didn't he I mean he held the guy at the back, spun him around, and it looked like he was gonna do the Rainmaker. Yep. You have Okada on U.S. soil. Land the fucking Rainmaker. Pop the crowd. Come on.
On somebody.
Somebody. Anybody. Somebody. I don't care. And then kick out of it. It's Kenny Omega kicked out of like a billion Rainmakers. Like, that's my problem. It's like, the draw of this match is Okada. You gotta play into Okada. And that's not a discredit to anybody else who was in this. Because everybody in this match was tremendous. Adam Cole was great. Again, anytime I'm watching a match with Hangman Adam Page in there, there's a moment in every one of those matches where I go, Jesus, he is so fucking good. That dude's
gotten so better, so much faster.
And the thing is, he works at that rate, and he's huge.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the thing. He's doing, like, Adam Cole, like, and I see Adam Cole do this stuff, and I think, okay, well, at his size, I see it a little more. I just always get so shocked when, like, Hangman Adam Page does, like the backflip, the moonsault, off the top rope, and then immediately climbs back up to the top rope to go do another thing to somebody. I'm just like, his work rate is crazy. Hangman on Page is just so fucking good. And he was great in this match as well. Everybody was great in this match. That finish was just, and I wonder again, the nature of the injury makes me wonder if it was a botch as well. And if Adam Cole just wasn't clear in the head to kick out. I do wonder if that is something that happened,
because he tried to kick out.
Yeah, I'm very, and I'm not, and that shouldn't necessarily excuse the finish, because again, I think clearly they identified that he was injured because the doctors went in there right away. It wasn't a case of like someone had to go like, hey, check out Adam Cole. Like, he clearly got messed up.
Yep.
There are three other people in that match. And you have
gotta be a better way.
And you still have a Rainmaker to land. That's the thing. That could have solved your finish right there. Is go, oh shit, Adam Cole's hurt. Okada comes back in the ring, lands the Rainmaker on Jay White. Hangman Adam Page runs right in after a Rainmaker and does his buckshot lariat and like finish the match somehow there. You know? Yeah.
Oh, I think you gotta call audibles on or another set of span finishers.
The finish was unfortunate. Was very unfortunate to what was up to that point a tremendous match. I do hope that this is not the last time we see Okada on U.S. soil, particularly in this pay-per-view event, because we're owed some Rainmakers. He said he was going to make it rain in Chicago, and it didn't fucking rain, Kel.
I thought the perfect spot that they just didn't cash in on was just Paige going for the buckshot, doing the springboard, landing, and as soon as he was coming
into
this
a
way,
Rainmaker,
into a Rainmaker, and just catch him. Adam Cole did hit the super kick into the moonsault on Adam Page, which is money. He hit the same one on Ricochet. That was fucking incredible. The timing on that.
Oh, he's wild. He's so fucking good at those.
All right, so we have that match. Then we have main event for the interim. Ready for this, Cole? AEW title. Another belt. Every match had a belt. So, John Moxley coming into this match versus Ace, Tanahashi. Good for Tanahashi. Huge pop. Came through. I mean, the crowd loved him. This is one of those, like, yeah, give the man his flowers, right? Moxley is Moxley. It's fucking nuts. They did their thing. I thought it was a good match for both. Again, I'm not out here gaining four stars, blah, blah. Thought it was a good match. I'm not going to say great. It was above average. It was a little bit above good, but like before great. Good match. I like the outside spots. Moxie always bleeds. Poor Renee. Renee's just like, again, it's a normal match, John. It's a normal match. He's just like, the blood added.
He's got a crimson mask.
So, no, I mean, that it added to the match, though. I thought it was cool. The finish of this was even just a little bit wonky, but I thought it at the end, I was like, okay, no, he pulled it off. I liked it. It didn't go too long, which is a great thing for me. They were in and out. They hit their moves. They hit their spots. Gave us what we wanted in the match. Everything about the match, good. Really good. How about that? I found something. Really good. Right below great is what I give this match. And then after it, we get the show of respect. Tanahashi, Moxley. Moxley points in the corner. We got the crisp mask and the belt. That was incredible. Great. Tanahashi gets up. Like, they get there. Shake hands. Jericho.
Did you not have enough Jericho on the show? How about he shows up again?
Again. And it's just like, oh, my God. They jump Moxley, jump Tanahashi. Who's minding his fucking business?
Because you know what's bigger than Tanahashi and Moxley? Promoting Blood and Guts on Wednesday, which we didn't know was happening Wednesday.
Because you told us 18 million times.
Why?
That it's a pay-per-view. And then not just the one run in. Everyone runs in periodically. Boom. One this way, that way. So after they're jumping Moxley, then we have Eddie Kingston come out to try to save Moxley. And then the rest of Jericho Society comes out. And then we have,
LAX comes out, and then Claudio.
Claudio comes out last. And then he's wrecking shop with the uppercuts, like European uppercuts.
I will say those European uppercuts are so
every
good.
Time. The running between
just looks so
corners.
Good.
Incredible. And he's like, at this point, he's the only guy that can use him. Everyone else is just like, I can't throw it like Claudio. So
this is Claudio's move.
Yeah, so now he's European uppercutting everyone. Cool. And then it's just like, that's how you end the pay-per-view? Like, what happened to just having your champion stand strong and like show respect? And it would have been fine. It was just too much gearing towards Wednesday. It was like unnecessary way to end what was a good match. It could have just been cool. It could have just lived by itself. It was okay, cool. Eddie Kingston refused to be in the ring with Claudio because they're beef from like back when. And I love that people point that out, and you can find that on social media. But 75% of your audience have no clue they even fucking had beef. So it's just like you could have found a different way to explain that on Wednesday. Like, you didn't need to do it today. Have Claudio come out for another run. It's like he did a double debut. It's just, that was exhausting. And I was like, so many times they send the fans home happy, completely satisfied. You leave there. If this was the 70s, you want a cigarette. Like, you know, like you just feel like, man, I am spent and I feel great. This one didn't quite leave me the same way. They had great in-ring matches throughout. Sure, like in some phenomenal past great, but there was just some stuff throughout that I was like, yo, it's a little choppy. It didn't make sense. It's just a little weird. And then I look back and I'm just like, it was an AEW pay-per-view featuring New Japan. It was not a co-pay-per-view. And AEW just kind of washed them up and down the card. And New Japan was there to put over AEW guys and then hopefully get a little pub for G1 this year and get a couple new fans, but they weren't there to like win or really compete. And it was weird. It's the first one. Shit can change. It might go different next year, but New Japan doesn't have to protect records. They don't post wins and losses every fucking week on television in a stat bar. AEW does. And I think that hinders it to a degree.
That's fair. I think that is a valid criticism of the pay-per-view as a whole. It did feel like an AEW, especially at the end, it felt like an AEW pay-per-view featuring New Japan. And I don't necessarily think it needs to be necessarily like New Japan versus AEW to make it a co-promotion event.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens as this relationship develops, because I do believe that at some point there is the AEW portion of this. Now there has to be an event overseas, I think, and I hope we get that. I think an AEW and New Japan event in Japan would be super cool.
Very cool.
And if that's going to be like an element that we have, and we kind of have it twice a year, I think that's super cool and awesome for just a treat for wrestling fans, because this was a wrestling fans show.
I would love to see Punk, Danielson go back over there, Claudio go back over, like. The Jericho, Japanese fans would go crazy. Yeah. Like, they see Jericho recently, but like Omega go back.
Moxley, all those guys.
Oh, like
they love.
There's just those WWE guys who haven't been able to go over there without like a bullshit little tour. Like to go back and really wrestle like a full event, like that'd be like huge. So
I think
that would be dope.
I think the match itself was good. It was a very very solid title match. Moxley's got to bleed and everything. I didn't quite see as much of a purpose for the blood for this match, which I just like was like, oh, okay, you just got to do it. But it did create a cool image at the end, and I don't know if they did anything after they went off the air, but that show needed to end with Moxley and Tanahashi doing a little handshake in the middle and being like, New Japan AEW, yeah, like that,
yep.
You know, and then play Tanahashi's music, and like that's the go home. That was the moment that needed to happen. We did not need to promote blood and
too
guts
much
in a New Japan AEW pay-per-view.
And
we had
bless.
Already had Jericho, Fireball, Umino. Like, there was much. Way – and Chris, I love your in-ring stuff, man. There was too much Chris Jericho. Way too much Chris Jericho happening.
Bless the people who then stuck around to Tony Khan's post-fight for like 2.5 hours.
I mean, those things are marathon sessions, man.
They don't pay me enough. Like, they like, and I shout out to Blue Eye. Nobody pays me enough to stick around after these long ass pay per views and watch 2.5 hours of a press conference of a made up sport. So, yeah.
For our entertainment.
Yeah, like no, I'm sorry, bro. Like, it's no, just
that
it's
was that was you know, for an event that was pretty unprecedented. We have a good start.
It's a good start. There's room for improvement.
We are
but
room
it is
for
great.
Improvement, and it is
great
a great
first
start.
Chance.
And all I can hope for is that, you know, especially if we get a Japan version of this with AEW over there, and we continue this as a series, there is a lot of potential for a lot of dream matches to occur. And clearly, there was already some that were on the table that, because Forbidden Door was forbidden and it was cursed by injuries. It didn't happen this time, but you know what? As you keep opening the forbidden door, it becomes more of a comfortable experience and becomes more regular. So I am all for this. It's pro wrestling. Let's all put it together. Let's all just, we're all here to have a good time. We're all here to
100% agree. I would love to see it as a home and home to take another sports
absolutely
reference.
Absolutely a home and home.
This year
that's
there.
Great.
Yeah. This year here.
Ooh, okay.
Here in Japan.
Okay. I'm greedy and I'm going twice a year, but I think that's a really good idea too. Yeah, make it more of like a World Cup kind of feel.
That's it. Just home and home. Every year we switch it up. So, it was great pay-per-view. Thank you, everyone, for listening. This was one hell of a recap. Thank you, Producer Cole. Baby.
That's right. That's right. That's right, Adam. Take that.
And even though we had a show full of titles, full of belts, full of champions, there is no better champion today than you, sir, and your Colorado Avalanche.
God
congrats.
Bless.
Congrats. Your Celtics couldn't do it. Even though they stole my DCs,
this was
the Avs did.
This was the craziest, one of the craziest 2 month stretches I will ever. I always like, especially the last few years, the Celtics and the Avalanche have both been in the playoffs at the same time. I've been very grateful for that. But usually, like one run ends and the other like goes on for another round or two, and like there's a little bit of space in between. This just didn't stop. It was just stress every night, which it's the kind of stretch that you're looking forward to, but you also are like, okay, I need a fucking break. I need to not watch sports for like a couple weeks now. So like, I'm like, baseball? Sorry. I'm not jumping straight into the Red Sox are playing great. That's awesome. I need a break because Avalanche and Celtics going both to the finals. Very grateful. I'm very lucky. I did want to be holding up two straps at the end of it. Not holding up two straps. Hopefully the Celtics will
take one
back next year. But you know what? Last night was and magical for personal reasons as far as my professional career. I started in hockey as my first job, and Nathan MacKinnon's rookie year, and they've kept a lot of that core there. So seeing those guys lift the cup was pretty fucking cool. And I thought about a lot of the people I worked in hockey with over the years. So
I love it for you. Your Broncos are up next.
Oh, and we're going undefeated. It's going to be great.
Can't wait to see the pain in your face.
What are you talking about?
When you start like 1-4.
Nope.
No, Russ is going to have you guys.
Not possible. Undefeated.
I love it.
The Red Sox are going to win the championship. The Broncos are going to win the title. And then the Celtics are going to win the title. Like, you understand the rest of the sports world now. That might be.
You're just going to have your sweep.
Hell, I have opened the forbidden door of sports.
It's like the Cole Slam, like the Tiger Slam.
It's the Grand Slam. I'm going for it every year.
Oh, you would be unbearable. So
I would
be
unbearable. And then I would get four title belts and just like, yes. Ultimo Dragon. There you go.
You were ordered them. I'm sure you would. Tony Khan got a guy. Tony Khan has a guy if you need a belt. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We appreciate you. We'll keep this short since it was a long show. Follow us on social media, wherever you guys can find the Corner Podcast. Check out our show on YouTube as well, where you guys can see us. We appreciate you. Thank you to everyone at Blue Wire Studios. You guys stay safe. Shout out to the old man who returns this week. Can't wait to chop it up with him. Huge week. Boxing, MMA, and of course, WWE is here in Vegas. So
stay
tons
tuned.
More pro wrestling.
We got
for
a lot of fun
corner.
Stuff coming.
Oh, it's going to be great. Until next time, we're out.
Baby!